Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm so happy that you're here right now. So sit back and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I hope you have your lunch. I hope you can turn off your Outlook or MS Teams for just an hour, take some nice deep breaths with me, and really sink into this present moment. Lunch with Leaders, for those of you who may be new joining us, it's where we come together in community across Penn Medicine and share with one another. Some of you are leaders, some of you may be individual contributors today, and we're really happy to have you here. You're gonna learn as much from our leaders on the panel today, as well as from what you share with your peers in the chat. So all back episodes of Lead can be found on the Lead Strong webpage. And now I think we're up to 35. So there are lots of shows. If you've missed them, lots of good viewing for your pleasure. Speaking of good viewing, did you catch last show? It was all around navigating career transitions with Regina Cunningham, the CEO of HUP, Greta Gilbode from PPMC, and Dr. Sharon Hull, and they were fantastic. We got such great emails. So thank you so much for those who took the time. Text me, call me, watch the show, send me an email. What people really seem to love, and what I know I really loved, was all three of these women were just so open about some of the challenges around navigating their careers. And they talked a little bit about the vulnerability around starting something new and not having all of the answers. I don't know about you, but it was super relatable to me. We got a lot of emails. Thanks for your kind words, Nita. Really appreciated that. Here's a cool thing. We've connected two Lunch with Leaders fans, believe it or not. Because this idea of the informational interview, which came up during the show, was something that someone was interested in. And so we connected Joanna and Tammy, and they're talking. You gotta love it when insights from the show turn into direct actions. Also, we had a lot of people reach out and say, hey, I'm thinking about my career. I'm thinking about the careers of the people on my team. What tools, PMA, do you have? And we were very excited to launch the Dreams Career Realized pathway. So we have so many tools and resources. Make sure you're taking advantage of them. And if all that sounds good and perhaps you missed the show, you don't want to miss it. Check out the Lead Strong page. It's a really good one to watch with your teams and really jumpstart discussions around their careers as well. Youngin, hi, let's go to the commercials. Great to see you. Happy week before Thanksgiving. I'm very grateful for you. You have a few commercials for us today?
Yeah, hi Cindy. Can you believe that Thanksgiving is just around the corner? It's just amazing how time flies. And it is also a great time to put gratitude in the center. And I invite everyone to take a moment to send a high five to your team, to your direct report, to your boss, people you may have interacted. It's easy and fun. You go to the High Five website, sign in with your network credentials and choose a picture, send a message, done. I know it brought a smile to me, the first message, the high five I received. So I hope you can take a minute to bring smile to others. The next 30-minute coach right after Thanksgiving is going to be all about high potentials. We'll define what high potential is, how you can strive to become one. And if you manage others, we'll help you identify and manage these valuable assets. We have sessions for individual contributors and managers, and recordings will be available if you can't join live, but I hope you can tune in. Tomorrow is the last day to order our copy of Fatal Invention for our December book club. It's a really important topic and it aligns really well with today's discussion. You can send in questions to the author to the book club inbox or to me. And even if you don't finish the book, please, you're welcome to join in and join the Blue Jeans event on December 1st and listen in, and hope to see you there. And we are planning something very, very special for our December year-end, year-end review, holiday spectacular on December 16th. And we truly, truly value you coming to the show and co-creating each show with us. And we really want to showcase you. So please take a video of yourself, 30 seconds or less, and tell us what you like at Lunch with Leaders. It can be something around what you learned in 2021, key takeaways, your favorite guest, totally up to you. We want to make it easy, so you can take a recording, text your recording to 215-279-1935 by December 7th, and don't forget to include your name and entity, and we really look forward to hearing from you. Then now the CNEs, make sure you have an active profile in the CNE system. Text today's code, which is 731-662-215-398-6728. You can text right now for next 24 hours. The event handout is on the LeadStrong website. For questions, reach out to the CME office. And now sit back and enjoy the show.
Thanks, Youngin. Big high five to you. And I can't wait to see your videos, everyone. All right, so let's talk about today's show. It's going to be really good. Improving the health of our community, number one, or one of the top fundamental pillars of our CEO, Kevin Mahoney. For those of you who aren't as well versed in community health, when we think about a definition, the WHO defines community health as the environmental, social, and economic resources to sustain emotional and physical well-being among people in ways that advance aspiration as well as satisfy their needs in a unique environment. For us here at Penn Medicine, what that translates to is a wide range of exceptional programs meant to help people in our community. And as we all know, we have some pretty amazing leaders, clinicians, providers, leaders, staff focused on driving change in our community across our wide-ranging community. And today we're going to hear from a few of many of them. And I'll look forward to hearing from some of you in the chat. It's really going to be a great show. So again, our goals today are to understand the key factors in improving community health, as well as some of the challenges that are challenging to all of us, as well as how do we address some of the health disparities and how do we build partnership with the community to advance our overall community health. So I love hearing from you. You may have burning questions for this one because our panelists, they know a lot of things about this topic. So I really look forward to hearing your questions in the chat, and I'm going to try to incorporate as many as possible. Our guests today are so generous that they said we'll take any and all questions during the show, after the show. So please, I'll try to incorporate as many as I can. So before I introduce the panelists, let's pull out our phones. I'd really like to hear from you. I want to check in with you to see how you're doing. So using your cell phone, I want you to text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. Once you're in the text survey, I'd love to know, what emotion are you feeling today? What's the one word that represents how you're feeling today? And while you're giving me your word, I would love to introduce our guest. So it's a deep pleasure for me to introduce Dr. Richard Wender. He's the chair of family medicine and community health. Dr. Carmen Guerra, who's the vice chair of diversity and inclusion in the Department of Medicine, as well as the associate director of diversity and outreach for the Abramson Cancer Center. And Alice Yoder, who's the executive director for community health at Lancaster General Hospital. So welcome, everyone. I'm so glad that you're here. You can come on camera and on audio now. Hi there. Hi, Rich. Hi, Alice. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, everyone.
Hey.
All right. Let's see. Colleen says in the chat that she's feeling rushed. And so we've got, let's see what words are coming up. Tired. Undercaffeinated. I like the use of the hyphen, so it is still one word. Overwhelmed, cautious, hopeful, open-hearted. I like that one myself. Hopeful, a little sleepy. Carmen, do these words surprise you based on what you're feeling and what you're seeing out there?
No, they don't. I was going to say excited is how I feel to be here today with my co-panelists, but I can understand the tired part. It's been a really full fall semester for all of us.
Definitely. We're getting a couple more words, rushed, overwhelmed, buoyant. Ooh, good word, Lisa. That's like a 25-cent word. I like it. Content, overbooked, happy. Oh, we got some more words. Oh, I like the smiley face with the glasses and the teeth. Very cute. Enthusiastic, also coming up. All right. Well, thank you for your words. I'm glad you're having some good feelings. At least there's some good feelings mixed in there with some tired. And I see excited really joining tired and overwhelmed and anxious. So I think that's really exciting to see that come up. It's been a while. So thank you so much, Casey, for running the poll for us. So I'm really excited to have the three of you here. You each have such unique stories and I've loved partnering with you. So maybe we should take a step back though and let's do some groundwork. I would love for you to educate me, our audience. They probably know this a lot better, and yet I'd still like, I want to keep growing here. So can you talk to us about the factors involved in community health? Do all communities face the same challenges in terms of improving health? Are the LG community challenges the same as West Philadelphia? Alice, you want to start?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you so much for having me here. Really excited about being here with my colleagues as well. So a lot of people think Lancaster's different, and we are. Probably the biggest difference is that we're a mixed county. So we're urban, suburban, and rural. And that's how we're different. So we have a lot of the same issues that you all have down in Philly. We have in Princeton and Chester County. The tactics we may use to address those specific issues are different. So we have a lot in common and a lot to share, but we just have different populations that we need to address.
Thanks. Carmen, community health, population health, health disparities, health equity. Sometimes I hear these words kind of stead, and I know that they mean different things, and yet I'm not really always so clear on when we're using which term. Can you walk us through, and then I know we also have a slide that we want to show to talk specifically about health equity.
Sure. Thanks. I want to echo my thanks, too, for having us today. I'm really thrilled to have this discussion. To your question, is community health different for population health? They are different. Community health involves actually working with individuals in the community to identify the priorities, the health priorities of the community, and working with them to co-create initiatives and strategies to address those issues. Whereas population health is more focused on caring for a specific population. For example, a population of patients with diabetes. And that population may span multiple communities, but what they have in common is that condition. And so working with population health involves more focusing on what are the major health issues that that population faces and how can we help them preserve their health and well-being.
Thanks. I love that answer. It's really helpful and it breaks it down. Rich, can you talk to us about the difference between equality and equity? You have such a good image, and I know Alice and Carmen all use this image as well. Could you walk us through?
Yeah, I'd be delighted. It's great to be with everybody. I've learned so much from Alice and Carmen through the years, and we continue to work together now here at Penn. On all too frequently, healthcare through the years has taken an approach of making sure that everybody gets the same support, the same resources, the same kind of access. You have a condition, you know, here's our approach. This is the resources we offer. On its face, it sounds like that should be effective. We're providing everybody equal, the same kinds of resources. But if you look at the image that the Robert Wood Johnson has helped develop and has shown all over the world, when you provide the same resources to a young woman sitting in a wheelchair, regardless of your height, you get the same bicycle, you're not going to get the same outcomes or the same results. So what equity demands and requires that we do is that we tailor our investment, we tailor our and shape our resources to in direct response to the needs of individuals. So that may mean a differential level of investment. If you look at, for example, navigation for patients with cancer, navigation is far more impactful for people who face more burdens. So for equity, the girl with the who's disabled in a wheelchair gets an appropriate bicycle that she can power with her hands. The other bicycles match the needs of those particular individuals. That's approaching problems through the lens of equity.
Thank you. I think that image is so powerful, and it really helped to solidify my own understanding of equality versus equity. So thank you so much for sharing that. I hope that helps you and the audience as well. Carmen, let me go back to you. What are some examples of some common health disparities and some of their causes? What are some of the implications?
Sure. Well, there are many, sadly. And so there's a lot of work to be done by communities like ours in healthcare. There are health disparities almost across every single problem in health that you can look at. There are racial ethnic disparities, so differences in incidence, frequency of disease, or the mortality of a disease across racial groups and ethnic groups, but also across economic groups. Low-income individuals are more at risk of either having disease and, if they have it, dying of diseases. And then there's geographic disparities. Recently, there's been a lot of light shed on the differences between rural populations, for example, and high poverty inner city populations have been well known to have many disparities. But in essence, the root of these, as we learn more and more about it, are almost what I would say like an onion. You peel one layer and you find yet another layer, which explains some of the causes. And it all starts in the community, which is why I really am so thrilled you're focusing on community health. The community is where many of the risk factors begin to happen and then subsequently change the course of someone's health. Many of these include the social determinants of health, which you may all have heard about. It's the conditions we're born into, grow up in, work in, and there are major differences in those. It's the built environment, for example, and the differences in those. And those can lead to predisposition of disease. I'll give you one example. We have some colleagues here at PSOM, Robbie Schnoll and his team, who have looked at, Andy Strasser has looked at, the density of tobacco shops in our city. And what they found was that there were more tobacco shops in lower income neighborhoods. But beyond that, guess where they were located? Near schools. And so that was a early health disparity that could potentially lead to more tobacco exposure in low income neighborhoods at a younger age, which subsequently can result in risks of lung cancer, heart disease, and many other things. So I hope that paints a picture for how these conditions vary and result in disparities.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. Dr. Gina South from Emergency Medicine is doing some really interesting work, also looking at trees. The more trees, the better the health of that community. So I think there's so much interesting work going on by the three of you as well as our colleagues. It's pretty remarkable. You've each really just done tremendous things to improve the health of our community. Alice, you've been in your role over 33 years after starting as a cardiac rehab nurse, which is really amazing. You are unsung heroes. Rich Wender, you've been here in Philadelphia, first at Jefferson, which we will talk about, and now here at Penn. And Carmen's been here, having come from Honduras. She has an amazing article in Philadelphia Magazine. If you want to talk about family of origin and Carmen's mission, you should Google her. She's pretty cool. So brag to me. Give me a couple of examples of things you're super proud of in this amazing careers that you've each built. Alice, you start.
Okay. Well, first off, I usually say a couple of decades of work. When you get into the actual years, that's a little scary what you just did, Cindy.
I apologize. I was bragging. I think it's pretty awesome.
It's okay. No. So I what I love to brag about is what I would call our journey upstream, which is really how healthcare providers might look at this work we're doing in the community, where the 30-something years that I've been part of community health and wellness, we've really come from looking at being hospital-centric, looking at sick care, to the journey upstream, to Carmen's point about looking at social determinants of health. So I'm really proud and excited about the journey that we've all been on together with our community, with our providers, to say that health happens in the community. So if we're looking for solutions to actually improve the health and well-being of our community, we need to be in the community. And so having those specific actions and steps that we take to make that happen is where we've been. What I'm super proud of is that we've been doing that for several decades here in Lancaster, and we were a recipient of the 2018 Foster G. McGall Prize from the American Hospital Association, which is about excellence in community health. So super excited about that.
Hey, that's brag worthy. I really appreciate that. You got a big shout out from your colleague, Susan Crow, as well. Rich Wender, talk to me, brag to me. Tell me about something that you think is brag worthy that our department has spearheaded. There are so many.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. You know, it's hard to brag. People who do community health have trouble bragging as individuals, because the community health work is a team sport 1000%. And the key member of that team is the community itself. This work is co-created with the community. That's a characteristic of community health, is co-leadership and co-creation. But I'm still going to give you a couple that we're pretty excited about. You know, I think Penn should really not hesitate to feel a sense of pride with the decision at the level of the health system to not allow Misericordia Hospital, which then became Mercy Hospital, to close, and the decision to find a very creative way to keep Hupp Cedar open and staffed by Penn doctors, and the excitement that the doctors and the nurses and the staff feel who are working there is really palpable. We have a long way to go, but that is a historical hospital that the community feels connected with, and they recognize that Penn's decision to make sure it stayed open was important. And then on a more personal and direct note, we just this past week or so officially opened a federally qualified health center on the campus of Hupp Cedar, run and by our key partner, the Public Health Management Corporation, PHMC, but staffed by Penn docs. Eventually we'll have Penn residents there. And last but certainly not least is the work that we continue to do in community vaccination against COVID is incredible, unsung, volunteer run, and we're continuing to vaccinate thousands, and that's all in direct response to community organizations who are inviting us in. So last week, when vaccination opened to 5 to 11-year-olds, I think in 2 days, one at Penn Alexander School, one at West Philadelphia School, we vaccinated close to 600 people, and the vast majority of them were 5 to 11-year-olds. And we've had volunteers from almost every health department here on campus who've come make that happen.
Thanks, Rich. Casey, would you mind putting up a slide? I'd like to brag about another very recent success story, is that we just launched our new mobile mammography truck in North Philly. And you can see Dr. Nunez as well as Dr. Albright. And they and their team screened over 241 women in a 2-week period, just Monday through Friday. They educated people around careers in nuclear medicine to a variety of students. I've got to give a big shout out to my colleagues, Tom Hecker, Brandon Grant. Great work. They were the behind the scenes forces. People said this couldn't be done in a couple of weeks. And lo and behold, with their leadership, they got it done, and they're providing some great service. Carmen, let me switch to you. Things that you feel proud about. I know you're really focused in the cancer area, and I'd love to hear some of the programs that you feel really proud of.
Sure, thanks. And my congratulations to that whole group on the mobile mammography, which is a big, wonderful step forward, possibly even a pilot for future similar activities. But yes, you said it, I'm in the world of cancer, so all of my examples have to do with cancer. And trying to reduce the incidence and mortality of that disease in our communities. And it started back in 2011 when I began to notice that patients who were from one of the 5 West Philadelphia zip codes were not keeping their appointments to screening colonoscopy at the same rates that other patients from other zip codes were. And when I began to inquire why that was, I heard a long list of reasons, many of which we could do something about, whether that was getting a ride to colonoscopy or inability to afford the over-the-counter cost of a prep and getting a companion. Sometimes it was just lack of awareness and that they really needed a colonoscopy because many of them thought, I feel well. And so that inspired us here at the Abramson Cancer Center to develop the first colorectal cancer screening navigation program, which is now led by Diane Boyd and Heather Schaefer. And that program focuses on individuals who have an order for colonoscopy and then begin to work to navigate those patients by overcoming all of the reasons that are keeping them from that important, possibly life-saving test. And fast forward, there's been almost 1,000 people that have been helped by that program. The shocking thing about that program that even I wasn't expecting was that 2 things. One is that they were, there was a high rate of adenomas in that community, which is a predisposing factor for colorectal cancer. About 44% of that population had at least one precancerous adenoma. And then the second thing was that a lot of the community members, when they went through that program, many of them wanted us to help them with other barriers to other aspects of their healthcare. So I realized with that program that one can build trust, which can be elusive when working with some communities. And then in 2014, we modeled after that initial success, we created a breast cancer screening navigation program with Dr. Ari Brooks and Emily Verderame. And that program's been even more successful. Over 4,000 uninsured and underinsured women have been screened through that program. And these navigation programs have identified cancers at an earlier stage when they are much more treatable. And we were able to navigate all of those patients to the Abramson Cancer Center to receive top world-renowned cancer care. So those are some of the examples that I've been involved with. There are more, but you know, all this to say, I'll end with what Rich said, that it wasn't me. It was a huge group of people, gastroenterologists, mammographers, community members, et cetera, that were responsible for showing us that we can make a difference in our communities and improve the health of our community members.
Thanks, Carmen. Those are very inspiring examples, and you're getting a ton of love in the chat. I'd like to go to the audience, and I'd love to ask, what work have you done, you, your team, others around you, to improve the health of our communities? Perhaps you're involved in some of these efforts. We'd love to give you a big shout out. Brag to us. What are you proud of? Share some of your examples. I know Rich is in the audience, and he and his team has had a pro bono physical therapy clinic. And while it's been closed to COVID, Rich, I need you to know that I've reached out to a couple people behind the scenes to see if we can re-engage in the conversation. So I haven't forgotten about you. I'm working on some things behind the scenes. So I'll get your info to the right people, but would love to hear from you. Brag to me. What are you proud of? I got to come back. You've talked so much about the co-creation process in the community. What are the things that we've done to build community partnerships? What do you think some of those leadership skills are that you've utilized to be successful? Let me start with you, Rich.
Now, you often hear that in the work of doing true community partnership, community health, the one of the most important leadership or just effective skills to develop is learning to be a humble leader. And recognize that when it comes to living in our communities, living on that street, we are not the expert in that experience. The people living on those streets are the expert in that experience. If you want to know what it's like to get your care from Lancaster, to get your care from Penn, don't ask us, ask the people who are getting their care. So I think learning to what it means to be a humble listener and make sure that is authentic. It's probably the single most important starting place. It's not the whole story, but it's the starting place. So the other thing I would just mention about leadership, you know, when you give a compliment to somebody who does this kind of work, the most positive things you can say is, boy, you're relentless. You just stay the course. You never give up. You're always doing this. You're always bringing this up because these problems took decades. They took centuries to develop. Many of them are rooted in structural racism, particularly in the Black communities of our urban areas. They took centuries to develop. They will take decades, if not longer, to resolve. They're not going to resolve overnight. So you want to learn a good skill is what is the step-by-step approach to stay the course.
Thank you so much. And I love the coaching on how to give compliments for people doing this work. I think that's really helpful. Alice, you know, several decades you've been unrelenting. So talk to me. What do you think it's taken to build that relationship with the community out in Lancaster and beyond?
Yeah, so I agree with Rich on so many of the points about being authentic and listening, asking questions. And I would say when we're out there listening, asking questions, the same thing we would do with our teams is we have to deliver as well. And if we make a promise, we have to stick to a promise. So if we're going out and asking for information in the community, we're doing that with the community. And I think that's some of the same things we look at with our teams in terms of how we would deliver on some of what we need to do. I would say that, you know, the being authentic is, you know, people in the community see right through us. So just like our teams would, we just have to really, talk about why we're being there and really express that. I would say when we think about out in the community should not be transactional. Like you just go out, ask something, say thank you very much and go back. That's the same thing we would never do with our teams, right? That we really make it, it's a relationship and not transactional in terms of what those activities are that we do with the community. We're in with them for the long haul, for better or for worse, richer for poorer, and that we're there sharing what do we need to do together to improve the health of the community.
I love it. Thanks, Alice. So many amazing success stories here in the chat. It's quite remarkable how much is going on. And what I love so much about Lunch with Leaders and the people who tune in is they represent all parts of the health system. So you can get a real flavor around some of the amazing efforts that are happening. Carmen, you spent your whole career focused in this work. Seems like this has much more momentum now. Very hot, like, you know, sure, cancer oncology is sometimes hot, but community health feels like it's the it girl right now. What do you think's changed? And how is it like being in the hot area now?
Yes, it has changed. Yes, it feels busier for sure. Really, I am just floored sometimes by how many of my colleagues want to be engaged in this work. And I think that this organization has so much momentum at the moment. I mean, I'm just reading these chats and I'm just, my heart is filled with how much people are doing to improve the health of our communities. So thank you to everybody out there who is just so genuinely engaged. But as far as what's changed, I would say for sure, there are events in society that made us look at the relationships with our community in a different light, right? And George Floyd was sadly that we had to go through that traumatic murder in front of us, but it really changed people. No longer could people turn a blind eye to how there was mistreatment of community members all around us, but before we didn't speak up. And it was time that we began to speak up for a lot of people. As traumatic as that was, something good came out of it. I would say a second thing is even there are external organizations that are, I think, also expecting more of us, probably because they went through the exact same process that we went through after George Floyd. And these external forces are really demanding more of us, whether it's payers who are demanding more value-based care or research funders who are demanding that the communities be engaged in the research. NCI is doing that, NIH with the CTSAs, PCORI, et cetera. The FDA, same thing. They are requiring the inclusion of, for example, patient experience data in trials. Regulators, another group that's demanding that of us. The community health needs assessment is one example, but accreditation bodies like LCME and ACGME. LCME is requiring us that we show evidence of engagement of community sites as locations, for example, for our interprofessional learners. So I would say there's a lot of momentum because of all of those external pressures, but also more importantly, because of who we realized we want to be and how we want to change the health of communities.
Sin, if I could pile on that. Yeah, pile on that. That was really everything that Carmen said resonated with me, but I would not overlook the effects of the COVID pandemic. Carmen said at the very top of the program that disparities are everywhere. Every disease state, you'll find disparities. But COVID pandemic has given a face to disparities, and we've been able to draw a more direct line between why did those disparities occur? Well, they occur because of your working conditions. They work because of how your transportation to get to work. They actually have a roadmap of what we mean by social determinants of health. I think that has highlighted the very fundamental question, are we gonna tolerate those disparities or are we gonna not tolerate those disparities? So I think that's another factor that has kind of called the question on community conditions. I wouldn't overlook our very non-cohesive political environment, maybe not in a very positive way, But I think that has also called the question about who are we as people.
Thanks. Rich, as the chair of Family and Community Medicine, when you look at all of the programs and you hear Carmen's programs and Alice's programs, how does Penn Medicine capture all the synergistic effects created by all these kind of disparate efforts that are happening in the community? I mean, as the chair, how are you pulling all this momentum together?
Yeah, that's a tremendous question that I spent a lot of my time thinking about. And I have a feeling that Alice and I don't have a feeling, I felt pretty confident that what Alice's team has done at Lancaster is a good roadmap for us to follow here downtown. But you're absolutely right, and the chat illustrates this. There's an incredible amount of work going. And I would just pose one question to you. I'll bet you that the partners, that everybody on this program is working with, trust them. They've built the trust. They've learned what it means. I know Carmen Guerra's partners, incredible trust in her, particularly with her team, her navigators. Our community health worker program, trust. The people vaccinating, trust. But I'll ask you this question. If you ask the community as a whole, do you trust Penn? You might get a different answer. And the only way we're going to build the overall trust is to be able to theme and, in fact, be one organization. So what does it take to go from the set of programs to a real sustained conversation, co-engagement? And that's what we're working to create, in part sponsored by ACT, the Action for Cultural Transformation, which has provided some cohesion for this work, to create a supported infrastructure of people whose full-time work is based in the community. And part of it will be pulling together, even if it's just beginning by having a list of all these things, an understanding of all the things we're doing. And for those people who want to work with the community, make sure that we have a clear roadway to do that, so that people don't just, well-meaning, but rushing into the community where there may not be an identified need, there may be other competing issues, may not always be the best strategy.
So more may not always be more. Alice, having had some success, or a lot of success in this area, maybe even a little bit further ahead than some of the other parts of Penn Medicine, do you have any secrets to your success?
I think it really does go back to the authenticity of what we're doing. And when we're with the community, that we really listen to them. I think that's tremendous. I would say when we're in the community, we think about what we need to bring to them and what are the things that they need. And that could be data, that could be expertise, that could be evidence-based practices, but listening to them and thinking about what it is they need to do. We do a lot of work in coalitions. I often joke around that, you know, we not only have a coalition for your right hand, but it's like the thumb on your right hand. There's a coalition on how to make that the best thumb that you can have, which I think happened over the years because that's how they think about it. And so I think one of the tactics we've used when we think about connecting with the community is thinking about, like, there's times when we need to lead on certain issues where either the community asks us to. We look around and there's not somebody leading, so we take a leadership role. There are times when we need to be an excellent follower, that there are times when there's another organization in our community that's taking the issue that needs to be advanced, and we become a really good follower. And there are times when we need to get out of the way. So there are times we can't do it all. When we get into this work, there's so many priorities. It's heartbreaking at times, but you know, you want to work on so many things. But if we do, we may not be focused, and we may not meet the goal we need to meet with that community. So lots of things, lessons learned over the past several decades with all of that.
Thanks so much, Alice. Carmen, a question came in prior to the show from the audience. How can we increase opportunities for community health workers within Penn Medicine? You have a thought on that?
I would say that community health workers are, first of all, a vital resource for really changing the health of the community. We know Shreya's group has been so instrumental in proving that and providing the research to do that. And so I would say that they are an untapped resource at the moment for the country as a whole, for us to actually improve the health of communities. And so I would say that, you know, the model is there, the financial model is there, the evidence is there, and you know, just engaging them further in our grants, because we, for example, in research might propose an intervention, but actually implementation of the intervention would probably benefit from engaging community health workers, navigators, promotoras in the Spanish communities. Because one of the questions you asked earlier was, is this the same all around? And the answer is really no. Every community is different. When I first met Rich, he would teach me, you know, all public health is local. Well, I would say the same about community health. All community health is local, and what works in one community is going to be different from another. And these individuals, the community health workers, navigators, promotoras, can really help us understand how to engage optimally with the communities.
Thank you so much. A little known fact, Carmen and Rich, they've watched each other grow up in this field, which is kind of cool to know. Alice, another question came in from Sean Snyder from Pennsylvania Hospital. How is mental health promotion and care being integrated into some of these community efforts? Do you have a word on that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've been conducting community needs assessments with our community since the mid-90s. So we go back several decades before the Affordable Care Act mandated that nonprofit hospitals need to conduct a needs assessment. And, you know, early on, engaging with our providers, the doctors, nurses, they always knew mental health was an issue. It showed up on a really loud and clear on a 2014 needs assessment. So we've been working with the community on solving the problem, because we know we can do certain things and implement programs for our own employees as well as our patients. But working with the community, we can lift up everyone, specifically when we're talking about special initiatives around anxiety, depression, and stress with the refugee community. So we need to look at that different than we would look at the rural white communities in Lancaster County and so on. So we've come together. One of the first things we did, just to give you a quick example, is almost all, I think it's about 80% of our primary care providers in Lancaster County, so not just speaking for Penn Medicine, Lancaster General Health, but we, through a coalition, brought all the providers together. They all agreed to do the PHQ-9, which is a screening for depression. So let's first start reducing the stigma by asking the questions, just like we take your blood pressure and we weigh you. It matters, your anxiety, depression, and stress. So we have, over the years, significantly increased screening for depression and then referrals. So with the referrals, we also look to, we're not getting any more psychiatrists in our community. We built up the capacity for counselors so that our primary care physicians can then refer to counselors, so that people that say yes to the screening, because many of the docs said, we can't ask the question, we know what the answer is going to be, so where do they go for service? So those are some examples. Super proud, talk about bragging, I can't help it. And Rich, I'm not supposed to brag, but I'm bragging on our primary care practice. I'm bragging on our primary care practices because, and our behavioral health service line, because they embedded counselors in the primary care office. So that when we go, because we have a physical health issue, but then we start talking about our anxiety, depression, it's not like we have to leave the building and go somewhere else, because the head's connected to the body and it's all one. And so super excited about the work we've done internally to address mental health.
I think you're allowed to brag. You're allowed to brag about the other people. I think that's perfectly fine, particularly primary care docs. You know, we've had the Penn Integrated Care Program that Matt Press and the Department of Psychiatry and many others have helped develop here, which really has been a tremendous addition as an innovative way to provide mental health services, at least counseling services, for patients who are receiving their primary care from here. But to the question, if you look at the community health needs assessment that we've conducted, the threat to mental health is right near the top of the list. So it's going to have to be a part of our community response.
Absolutely. Rich, let me stick with you. I want to be provocative. What are we not doing in our educational mission around physicians, nurses, APPs, and other key roles that we need to do if we're really going to have even greater impact to our community? Can I put you on the spot?
Sure. You know, I think the one thing we're making some progress with, but again, we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to solve it overnight, is we do need to have a more diverse workforce, and we need to have a beginning at very, very young ages, making sure that we address one of the key social determinants of health, which is access to high quality education, which is impacted by so many other factors. So that the pipeline of individuals who have the opportunity to pursue careers in healthcare is greater. But our workforce does not look like the communities we're serving in many cases, and we've recognized the need to do that. Second of all, there has been an emergence of what's called service learning. Service learning is a great concept. It means that you create where you're actually providing the education is in direct response to the needs that you've identified with programs that are effective. And so it's really kind of a shift. You know, it's the needs that you're addressing are the needs of the community, and you're learning how to teach while you provide the service, keeping the needs of the community first, not the needs of the learner first. It's a little bit of a shift in focus. So there is a program at Penn now across many of the schools to provide service learning opportunities, but we have a long way to go to really build out more robust activities. And key to doing that, by the way, and this is where I think there's been a deficiency, is we've learned through COVID vaccination and many others that trust is a public health issue. We cannot be approaching the community and say, do we have learners for you? You know, that can't be the way we approach that. We have to really build the trust, build the programs, and say, listen, can we find a way to integrate our learners into this? They're enthusiastic about it. They want to contribute. So at least that's a start. I'm confident that Carmen's had a lot of insight into this as well, particularly with her role as vice chair, leading the vice chairs in the departments.
Thanks. Yeah. You want to talk about this, or can I ask a different question?
Oh, I was just going to say, Rich nailed it. But, you know, the other thing is who's going to be where and who's going to be doing this teaching? I think we have to start thinking about getting out of the mindset that education has to happen within our walls, because that's not where the community is. So getting people out to the community and actually allowing them to see the health of the community, the environment of the community, the barriers to health, is something that I think we need to make progress on. For example, Dr. Susie Rose and her team here, in fact, one of Rich's faculty members, created a Community Leap program, which brings the medical students to people's homes. And what the teachers of that program are actually the community health workers. And so we have to start thinking about one thing we haven't talked a lot about, which is power sharing. We can't just be the only ones that actually have the power to educate others, because we just don't know enough of what community barriers are and what community members face. So I just wanted to say, you know, that's, I think we have a long way to go there, because that's something that we really need to innovate on.
Thanks. Carmen, I want to stick with you. So as a member of the Abramson Cancer Center, you were probably a part of the big flash mob that took place to celebrate Dr. June's groundbreaking work on CAR T cells. If we kind of take that mentality and think about a flash mob in community health, what do you think is the next big thing? Is it in prevention? What's the next big thing in community health? Like, where's our flash mob going to be in this work?
That's a hard question. I would say that there is emerging technology. Rich and I are actually part of a technology that could change, in my world, how we screen for cancer. So, for example, there are companies right now that have changed the entire paradigm of screening for cancer so that it now would rely on a potentially just a simple blood test. And so maybe cancer screening moves to the home or the local environment. There are people at the Abramson Cancer Center that are also moving cancer care to the home. People in emergency medicine that also conducted a pilot of providing emergency care to low-risk patients in the home. So I think a big win for us would be a model where we can decentralize, and this COVID actually did give us a push on, decentralize some of the things we do, such as clinical trials, having those occur at a more local environment. And I think that, you know, that would be a big win for our communities to have access, you know, no longer be as much of a problem, and to have, in some ways, a lot of say about how to do this, right? Because now this is what exists in their community. So to me, that would be a flash mob moment.
Thanks. I love it. Alice, how can our audience get more actively involved in what's happening in community health? where could they get some more information? There have been a number of questions that we're probably not going to be able to get to because we're running out of time, although I feel like we could have another whole hour on this topic. How can people get involved and get info?
Yeah, I would say, you know, going on the website, I know from on the Lancaster General side, we have a community health web page and lots of information on programs that are available. And we always want to get questions, ideas, suggestions on what do you think is the next thing we need to do to improve our programs, new programs. But I would say what's really helpful for us, just as we're listening to the community, our employees are the community. So our employees work for us, with us, but they live in the community. So what they're experiencing and what they're hearing is significantly helpful and really helped inform our program. So love to hear from employees on so many different levels.
Thanks, Alice. I want to ask you all, you're all three leaders I respect so much, and what a time it's been in terms of leading and then leading in community health. What have you learned about yourself as a leader over the past year? Rich, let me start with you.
You know, it's leadership is a journey. And I looked at my, you may not believe in Myers-Briggs or not, but when I do my profile, the one part that resonates is that I don't just like to lead, I need to lead. And, you know, since I was very young, I've always been in leadership positions.
I'll tell you mine, you tell me yours.
I'm an ENTJ.
Okay, I'm an ENFJ, my F and my T are tied. Alice, Carmen, do you know your Myers-Briggs types?
I'm same as you, Cindy.
ENFJ, Alice?
I think I'm with Rich here. I can't remember for sure, but I think I am.
Cool. I like it. We have some things in common. All right, keep going, Rich. Sorry to digress.
So, you know, although I really embrace leadership opportunities, I think it's one of the most, it keeps you very humble. And I think one of the most important lessons I've learned is there's a difference between being a relentless champion for equity and disparity reduction versus being a crusader. And I think crusading is something that is can be a bit of an agitator from the outside. I really like the opportunity to lead from the inside. And that requires a really thoughtful and informed balance and a lot of listening, a lot of conversations to bring people together and yet be uncompromising with what is really an important goal.
Thank you so much. I love that people are sharing your Myers-Briggs types with us in the chat. And there's a good reminder from Pete that us extroverts need to make room for introverts. I feel that.
Yes.
Alice, what have you learned about yourself as in the past year as a leader?
Yeah, certainly the pandemic really brought out one of my challenges I've had for years. It's I love change, and even though it seems like it's a good thing, from a leadership standpoint, I have to keep myself in check. And I think the pandemic did it because both myself and our department took a pretty lead role in both testing, contact tracing, and vaccination. And I think what I learned is how important the whys are in explaining to a team. So I love change. And the issue that happened for me is I'm expecting everybody else to love it at the rapid pace that I do and to fall into line. And so I don't want to find myself, which I have at times, where I'm out there, I turn around and there's nobody there. So, you know, I have to watch that pace that I feel comfortable with and making sure that I explain the whys and the hows and empower. So to make sure that when we're at where we need to be, that there are other people there with me.
For admitting that, Alice, I sometimes can fall into that trap. So many of us can, especially when you have a lot of energy and enthusiasm. Carmen, I know we're like running short on time, but like, tell me, what have you learned about yourself as a leader this year?
Well, thanks for that question, Cindy. You know, after years of doing this, I recognize that sometimes just your own efforts and our own institution is not enough to create positive change in a community, that some of this may require larger policy changes. And so one of the things I began to learn more recently in my journey in leadership is how to use my voice and advocate for our communities. What I wasn't expecting was the reaction, because when you do that, what can happen is there is bound to be a group of people or an organization that might feel threatened And so you can't go on this journey, I think, without expecting that you might ruffle some feathers and make people uncomfortable. And you know what? That's a good thing, because as my great friend David Ash told me, making people uncomfortable is a good thing in this space. Sometimes progress comes out of making people uncomfortable. And so that was a recent lesson that I've learned about myself, that if you're going to go down this path, you have to be prepared for that. And so therefore, I've been cautious about, helping younger faculty, for example, who might not yet be prepared for that type of backlash, go down this path. You really have to work with them. You really have to be there to support them and assure that they feel supported if they go down this path.
Thanks so much, Carmen. I appreciate that answer. Sometimes I get some pretty hard feedback on Lunch with Leaders, so I understand what that feels like. Okay, I got to ask the most fun question, and we got to answer it in 30 seconds or less. What's a hidden talent that you have, Rich Wender, or what's something not many people know about you in like a couple of words or less?
Everybody knows I love writing cancer control songs that I like to sing at big meetings. That's pretty well known. I also happen to be a pretty good amateur card magician.
Ooh. That's good. I wish we had more time. I might have to put you on the spot at some point. Alice, same question.
Okay, this is a good one. I am a competitive hula hooper. I've done it since I was a child, and it's great for it comes in handy to entertain kids, and it helps make you not myself. I don't take myself seriously. You have to hula hoop. You just got to hula hoop. Competitive.
Listen,
very
I think we might need a video of that. We may need a picture for the next show. Yeah, Chi-Chi said, you're a really good singer, Rich. Carmen, same question.
When I was little, I thought I wanted to be a hairdresser. For some reason, I've always liked to play with hair. So I've actually cut all of my kids' hair, my husband's hair. Ooh, they've never been to a hairdresser ever. Well, guess when that became useful? During the pandemic.
Oh, and then a you lot of best people style ever.
A lot of people didn't want to go to a hairdresser, so that was a useful skill that I had.
I'd say. Well, thank you both. Thank you, all three of you, so much. I appreciate your leadership, and I value our collaboration, and thanks for being on the show today. So we've got a big show coming up, December 2nd, Telling a Story with Data. This is the toolkit, the skill set that you don't even know you need, but you may need it. We've got Chad Johnston, Tony Donovan, and Leah Rubini. You're not going to want to miss it. That's December 2nd. And as Youngin plugged earlier, do not miss it. The Holiday Spectacular Show, December 16th. We're ending the year Lunch with Leaders strong. We're going to have all sorts of really fun things for you on that show. So again, all the back episodes of Lunch with Leaders can be found on the Lead Strong webpage. We welcome your feedback. Please take the brief survey to let us know what you're thinking about for 2022, how we make Lead Strong as well as Lunch with Leaders even better. I want to thank the Lunch with Leaders team. You rock. Very grateful to you. I want to thank Ray Rollins today, who's with us. It's so nice to work with you live and in the flesh. And let me just thank you, our audience. Thank you so much. I'm wishing you and your families a very happy and healthy Thanksgiving. I'm so grateful for each of you. Thanks for digging down deep. Thanks for continuing to show up, head, heart, being the best leaders that you can be. I'm grateful to be in this community with you. One thing's clear, we're totally stronger as long as we're sticking together, because together we're really making a huge difference. So thanks so much for spending some time with me today. I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. Thanks, everyone.